Anyway, we have the new microphones, so let's hope it works tonight. Announcements will be here Saturday. We're going to do the second step proposition exercise. If you have the exercise from the last week or Sunday, bring it. If you didn't come and you're not working and you can come, the information in there is really powerful. It changed my life. And we'll be going through that. Sunday night, we were reading to employers, and it's a chapter that's not read much, and there was really, we read really good stuff. A lot of spiritual principles on how we look, how we are, and how we can get better. So if you can come Sunday night, we'll be reading more of that chapter. Tonight, we are starting chapter 3, more about alcoholism. And we've covered to this point the doctor's opinion, which told us what our problem is. Then we've read Bill's story, which is a story of hope, and somebody who had alcoholism in a hopeless condition of mind and body, right? And he was dying. And then somebody came to him and gave him the solution from the Oxford group, and he worked the steps, and then we're here today. And then the next chapter is There's a Solution, which describes how we have two powers that we need to recover. We have the power of the fellowship and of being together with a common peril. But what really keeps us together and which is the deal is the common solution, the way out on which we all agree. And then they talk about the powerlessness of our body to control how much we drink. Anybody have that? And then the powerlessness of our mind to say no to the first drink. It's in italics, page 24. And then the next page is the solution describing the spiritual change, the change in our personality, the relationship with God in our lives, a new power, a new direction. Then we talked about Roland Hazard and Dr. Young and how Roland brought back the solution from Dr. Young, which was the spiritual experience. He went to the Oxford group. He rescued Ebbie Thatcher, and Ebbie Thatcher went to Bill, and we're here today. So now we're going to read more about alcoholism. This is a chapter that every time I read it, it says something new to me. And before we begin, I'm going to ask God to help God to set aside everything I think I know about you, God, the steps, recovery, the big book, what's best for me, what's best for others, especially let go of all my old ideas so I can live in your truth, and help guide my words today so I can carry your message. Amen. So it's more about alcoholism. This chapter's put in here because they know we're not going to want to do the action. They understand that. Anybody relate to that? So they're going to hammer home in this chapter how without God, we're screwed. Now, they don't say that, but they end the chapter and this whole portion of the book, it says we are without defense against the first drink. Now, I've heard that a lot of times. I'm without defense against the first drink. So philosophically, yeah, I understand that. But what they're really saying is that if I'm an alcoholic, I will drink again. That's what we do. So they're going to talk more about alcoholism, and they're going to describe in the beginning of the chapter the loss of control and then the loss of choice. And they're going to talk about the queer mental twist that we get in our minds right before we drink that tells us it's okay. So it's more about alcoholism. So you would have to know what is alcoholism. Isn't that a good question? So they're going to tell you more about it and maybe describe it to us. And we all said we were alcoholics, right? Anybody, right? It's AA, right? So they're going to tell us more about it. And it says most of us have been unwilling to admit we were real alcoholics. So what makes you a real alcoholic? I think we're all real alcoholics. But some people don't understand what it means and they haven't fully accepted it yet. So a real alcoholic, they're going to describe, is someone who cannot control how much they drink and has no choice not to drink, and who is separated from God and can't manage their lives so that their emotions don't tell them to drink. And so they're going to talk about and describe a real alcoholic in the next few pages. No person likes to think he is bodily and mentally different from his fellows. In fact, we think that we're not only bodily and mentally different from our fellows, but we're better than they are. That was a joke. Nobody laughed. All right, I'm done with the humor. Now they think it's funny. This is a tough group if you're listening to the podcast. Therefore, it is not surprising that our drinking careers have been characterized by countless vain attempts to prove we could drink like other people. So they're going to begin now, and they're going to talk about the control, drink like other people. The idea that somehow, someday, he will control and enjoy his drinking is the great obsession of every abnormal drinker. So, and it's an old idea, and control and enjoy is an obsession. And an obsession is something where your mind cannot stop. It says the persistence of this illusion is a false belief, is astonishing. Many pursue it into the gates of insanity or death. And they pursue this obsession that they can control their drinking. Now, why would they do that? Why would an alcoholic think that even though he's never been able to have one drink, why before he drinks can he tell himself that he's just going to have one and believe it? Because we're insane. Now that wasn't funny. But we are it's insane for an alcoholic. But you must be able to tell yourself right before you drink that you're not going to end up in jail the next day. You know, that you're not going to pass out, that you're not going to lose your job, or else you wouldn't do it. And or people just say, what the hell, and drink anyway. But it's an illusion. And it's the great obsession of every abnormal drinker. Now, I think towards the end, people don't even want to control it anymore, right? At the bottom, the downward spiral. Anybody remember that? Yeah, it's not a question of control. We can't live with it or without it, remember? And it's the jumping off place, remember, and the vision for you. So here's the powerful line. This is the first step in recovery. And everybody says, well, it's not the first step in the program of recovery, but this is the first step that you have to take if you're going to recover. It says we learned. Learn means a process, an experience. You're gaining knowledge that we had to fully concede to our innermost selves. And concede means to admit something true or valid after first denying or resisting it. So you deny or resist it, and then finally you have to admit it's true to your innermost self. Well, where is your innermost self? And I wrote, we have to break through our mind, our innermost self, that we were alcoholics. So we have to see the truth. And remember, it says the alcoholic's life can't separate the truth from the false, remember, even though it's injurious. So at some point, we had to concede the truth about our existence. And it says this is the first step in recovery. Fully concede to your innermost self that you're an alcoholic. To accept and admit that. Now, it's not the first step in the program. The first step in the program is you admit you're powerless over alcoholism, right? But you can't admit you're powerless over alcohol if you don't admit you're an alcoholic. So before you can take the first step, you have to concede that you're an alcoholic. Now, if you're an alcoholic, then you're powerless over alcohol. And it says the delusion, a belief that is firmly maintained despite evidence to the contrary. Anybody do that? That we are like other people or presently may has to be smashed. We're never going to be able to be like normal people. We're ever not going to be an alcoholic. Now they're going to spend the next few pages hammering home that with some description. It says, we alcoholics are men and women who have lost the ability to control our thinking. Oh no, drinking. But isn't that what they're talking about? We can't control our thinking and then we drink. We know that no real alcoholic ever recovers control. Now, if a real alcoholic never recovers control, then the solution to their problem is not to drink, right? Remember? But we can't do that because we've lost the power of choice. So now they're going to talk about control, and then they're going to talk about choice, and then the chapter is going to hammer home the queer mental twist right before the first drink. All of us felt at times that we were regaining control, but we may have thought we were regaining control. That was an illusion too, right? But such intervals, usually brief, were inevitably followed by still less control, which led in time to pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. Now, I'm going to give you a hint. Pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization is not good. It's not a good situation. And not only that, but it can keep getting worse. It could get more pitiful, and it can get more incomprehensible, right? And so we are convinced to man that alcoholics of our type are in the grip of a progressive illness. Now, does anybody remember when they were pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization, but they didn't have a solution yet? See, we go through that period where we have incomprehensible, pitiful demoralization, and then we get self-pity, remember? That bitter morass of self-pity that Bill was in, but we don't have the solution yet. And it says, our type are in the grip of a progressive illness. Over any considerable period, we get worse, never better. And I wrote, even if we stop drinking for a while, we never get better. And remember, if you don't drink for months or even years, and you're sober, your body's getting older. Your liver is getting older. You're not going to process alcohol as well. So then when you start drinking after you've been sober a while, it has more of an effect on you, quicker and worse. We are like men who've lost their legs. They never grow new ones. Neither does there appear to be any kind of treatment which will make alcoholics of our kind like other men. I remember reading an article in one of the journals, this was a long time ago, where the VA was doing a study on this pill that was going to control your drinking. So they gave this, no, it was something else. They got 60 VA alcoholics, or maybe 100, and they had them take the pill. And then they had the alcoholics fill out the questionnaire on how much they were drinking and whether it was working. You get how preposterous it was? You know, and we always lie. So they all said they're drinking less. And this got published. It was great. I just laughed. I don't know that we would want a pill. And if we did, we'd probably take more than one. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because one wouldn't work, right? So we'd have to take two. Yeah, you get the picture. We have tried every imaginable remedy. In some instances, there has been brief recovery. Now, recovery means a return to a normal state of health or mind. Now, it's usually brief, followed always by a still worse relapse. I think this is where they get the word relapse, is a deterioration after a period of improvement. So we say people relapse when they go out, but I don't know that they were ever recovered. You know, they come here for a while, but I don't know that they truly have recovered and then relapse. Relapse is not good, by the way. It's a deterioration of a period of improvement. Physicians who are familiar with alcoholism agree there's no such thing as making a normal drinker out of an alcoholic. Now, what I know, a lot of physicians tell alcoholics to stop. They say, you need to quit drinking. Well, that's true, but they don't understand that that's. And then the alcoholic will say, I am. I'm going to quit. Right? But we know how preposterous it is. I can't tell you how many cases I've seen where somebody's in the hospital for cirrhosis, poor guy, sick, bleeding, all sorts of problems, and they're telling him to quit. He's going to quit, and they're spending days worrying about the potassium and the sodium and the electrolytes and all that. And I know they're not going to quit. See, it's all this time and effort and money. Most of them, 95% or more, don't quit. I'm not saying they shouldn't try to help them, but the solution is not fixing their electrolytes. It's not fixing their physical situation. Despite all we could say, many who are real alcoholics are not going to believe they're in that class. They're not going to believe that there's no treatment. By every form of self-deception and experimentation. So how do you deceive yourself? How do you deceive yourself? You tell yourself a lie. You tell yourself things that aren't true. You always feel better when you deceive yourself, don't you? You feel good. You know, I got a plan. I'm not going to drink tomorrow. It's going to be okay. But it's deceiving yourself because I think the thing is, you know you can't follow through on it. They will try to prove themselves exceptions to the rule, therefore non-alcoholic. If anyone who is sure, most of the people who come to AA have gotten past this point, you know. But if anyone who is showing inability to control his drinking can do the right about face and drink like a gentleman, our hats are off to him. Heaven knows we have tried hard enough and long enough to drink like other people. I don't know towards the end, I don't know how many people try to drink like normal people, you know, at the end. We may have done that early in our alcoholism. And here are some of the methods we tried. Drinking beer only, limiting the number of drinks, never drinking alone, never drinking in the morning, drinking only at home, never having it at the house, never drinking during business hours, drinking only at parties, switching from scotch to brandy, drinking only, you think by this point they get the picture, right? Drinking only natural wines, agreeing to resign if ever drunk on the job, like they wouldn't get fired, taking a trip, not taking a trip, swearing off forever, with and without a solemn oath, I love that. Taking more physical exercise, reading inspirational books, going to health farms and sanitariums, accepting voluntary commitment to the Psalms, we can increase the list ad infinitum. It's sad, isn't it? But we try, right? We want to do better. But you see, they're going to get to the point, they're headed to the next chapter, which is we have no power. We have no power. We can try all these schemes. I don't have power to follow through on it. Anybody else have that problem? We do not like to pronounce any individual as alcoholic. Now, I've heard somebody say, you can't tell anybody they're an alcoholic. Well, that's not what they said. We don't like to pronounce an alcoholic, but Bill and Bob told AA number 3 that they were an alcoholic, remember? But you can quickly diagnose yourself. Step over to the nearest bar room and try some controlled drinking. Try to drink and stop abruptly. Try it more than once. It will not take long for you to decide. If you're honest with yourself about it, it may be worth a bad case of jitters if you get a full knowledge of condition. So we have to know that we cannot control how much we drink. Now there was this lady, Elizabeth, her name was Mann. She had this thing, you take 2 drinks every day for 30 days, just 2 drinks at the same time, if you could do that. Of course, that's never successful. She was head of the National Council of Alcoholism and
Marty Mann.
And she was the first woman in AA. Though there is no way of proving it, we believe that early in our drinking careers, most of us could have stopped drinking. Now, I'll tell you what somebody will do. They'll take 2 drinks for 3 days in a row and just drink 2 drinks. And then they'll say, you see, I can do it whenever I want. So the next night they'll drink. Tom's laughing, but it makes sense, doesn't it? Right? Yeah. Or we've been sober for 30 days. I can quit any time. Right? I can come back. I did it 30 days. I can do it any time. And then they go out and drink. It says, but difficulty is few alcoholics have enough desire to stop while there's yet time. Very few people desire to stop. They get in trouble, so they're going to quit for a while. But they don't have a desire to stop. There's a difference between the word desire. We have heard of a few instances where people who showed definite signs of alcoholism were able to stop for a long period because of an overwhelming, powering desire to do so. Here is one. The desire, strong feeling of wanting to have something or something happen. Now this man of 30, it's really a very good example of a lot of points. A man of 30 was doing a great deal of spree drinking. He was very nervous in the morning after these bouts and quieted himself with more liquor. So he was a serious drinker, right? Anybody get nervous in the morning? He was ambitious to succeed in business. You see, his higher power was his ambition to succeed. And that was a greater power and desire in his mind than drinking. But he saw he could get nowhere if he drank at all. Once he started, he had no control whatever. So here's the deal. He made up his mind not to quit drinking forever, but to quit drinking until he had been successful in business and retired. So his obsession for success, his self-centered obsession for success, overcame his desire to drink. But he knew once he was successful, he was going to do it, and he would be free to do it. So he would, an exceptional man, he remained bone dry for 25 years and retired at the age of 55 after a successful and happy business career. And why was he happy? Because he got what he wanted. That's what he wanted, and he got what he wanted. Then he fell victim. Victim means you're going to be fall prey to an idea, to a belief, which practically every alcoholic has. We see this a lot in AA. People come and go. That his long period of sobriety and self-discipline had qualified him to drink as other men. Out came his carpet slippers and a bottle. In 2 months, he was in a hospital, puzzled and humiliated. He tried to regulate his drinking for a while, making several trips to the hospital meantime. Then here's what he did. He gathered all his forces. Anybody else do that? Tempted to stop altogether and found he could not. Every means of solving his problem, which money could buy, was at his disposal. Every attempt failed. Though a robust man at retirement, he went to pieces quickly and was dead within 4 years. Now, there's several reasons they put this story in here. One, no matter how long I'm sober, I should never, never believe that I can have one drink, that I'm ever going to get control. Now, what that should do is make me want to seek God all the time so he can give me the choice not to drink. So as I can never forget my complete defeat, my first step, because if I do, then I won't seek God and I'll be back on my own. And so, and then it contained a powerful lesson. Most of us believe that if we remain sober for a long stretch, we could thereafter drink normally. And you see that too. People stay a while and then they feel like they've got it. They know what to do, right? They understand themselves. But here's a man who had 55 years, found he was just where he left off at 30. And I think the reason it really helps when people come back and tell us what happened, it's a reminder that it's never going to get better. It's never going to be better when we drink again. So they help themselves when they come back, and then they help us. We have seen the truth demonstrated again and again. Once an alcoholic, always an alcoholic. Anybody disagree with that? It's pretty obvious, isn't it? Mm-hmm. But they're hammering it home because we don't ever want to forget. We don't want to get too far away from our first step, ever. And that's why I think meetings are important, being part of AA, being part of a home group. You never want to get too far away from the idea that you're an alcoholic. You have to come here and say you're an alcoholic, right? And you have to admit that you need to go someplace for help. And it's a form of humility. Commencing the drink, after a period of sobriety, we're in a short time as bad as ever. If we're planning to stop drinking, there must be no reservation of any kind, nor any lurking notion that someday we will be immune to alcohol. Now, the thing that Dr. Bob emphasized, and sometimes I hear at meetings that say, well, you just don't have to drink today. Well, that's true, right? But Dr. Bob said, and he would ask him, do you want to quit for good? Are you done? And are you done in terms of you're admitting complete defeat? And if there's a lurking notion that someday you'll be immune, that day will come when you'll believe that. And so we don't want to do that. So it says, no reservation of any kind. Then he says, young people may be encouraged by this man's experience to think they can stop as he did on their own willpower. Now, why won't willpower work? They're going to tell you in this chapter, because right before you drink, you think it's okay. Your will won't have any power to tell you it's a bad idea. Because alcoholics have this weird thing, and addicts too, that right before we drink or use, all we can think about is what it's going to do for us rather than to us. Did anybody feel better on the way to the liquor store? Or when you get the pills from the pharmacist? or you steal or whatever you do to get them. I don't know. But you always feel better because you know it's coming. The relief is coming, right? And once you have that in your mind, nothing can stop you from doing that. It says, hardly one of them, because of the peculiar mental twist already acquired, will find he can win out. We get this peculiar mental twist. Our brain is damaged regarding to alcohol. There's a part of our brain that can't say no to it. Now, how does it get damaged by alcohol? It gets damaged because that part of our brain can only remember what alcohol is going to do for me, not to me. And when it, and I decide that I'm going to have a drink, I can't, that part of my brain will never say no. And the only solution for that is God. I can't fix my mind. I can't fix a sick mind with a sick mind. Have you heard that before? And that's what they're talking about. And so I think I'm just going to read, to be gravely affected, this is, one doesn't have to drink for a long time nor take the quantity some of us have. They said this is true of women. Potential female alcoholics are often turning the real thing or gone beyond recall in a few years. I think they tend to get liver damage quicker, but I don't know if that's true, but that's my experience. Certain drinkers who would be greatly insulted if called alcoholics are astonished at their inability to stop. And we are familiar with the symptoms, see a large number of potential alcoholics among young people everywhere, but try and get them to see it. I think that's the problem when somebody's young. We have some young people here. It's hard to see the hopelessness of your situation at a young age. But I think we're doing better at trying to keep young people here coming back. And, you know, the youngest member when they started was like 38, and they thought he was like a kid, or 35. They called him son. As we look back, we feel he'd gone on drinking many years beyond the point where he could quit on our own willpower. If anyone questions whether he's entered, now here they're going to talk about the mind. If anyone questions whether he has entered this dangerous area, let him try leaving liquor alone for 1 year. If he's a real alcoholic and very far advanced, there is scant chance of success. In the early days of our drinking, we occasionally remain sober for a year or more, becoming serious drinkers later again. Though you may be able to stop for a considerable period, you may yet be a potential alcoholic. So here's a potential alcoholic, is the person that cannot quit on their own. We think few to whom this book will appeal can stay dry anything like a year. Some will be drunk the day after making their resolutions, most of them within a few weeks. A resolution is a firm decision to do or not do something. For those who are unable to drink moderately, the question is how to stop altogether. And then it says, and we're going to go review this next week because it's powerful stuff, we'll end here. We are assuming, of course, that the reader desires to stop. So the person who's reading this book, if they desire stop, now here's the deal. Whether such a person can quit upon a non-spiritual basis depends upon the extent to which he has already lost the power to choose whether he will drink or not. That's a key part of the book. If you've lost the ability to choose, you cannot quit upon a non-spiritual basis. There's no other remedy but this program of the steps in God. Now, if you find God another way without this book and he gives you a power not to drink, the AA doesn't say that can't happen. But they say that if this was their experience. So we'll stop there. It's good stuff, isn't it? Mm-hmm, absolutely. Powerful. I hope the recorder worked.